And in case that wasn't blatantly obvious, the station is WUSB in Stony Brook. The time is 5:59 p.m., soon to be 6 p.m., on a Tuesday night, which means that it's time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. Except that's not our theme, is it? We're starting off with a bang, aren't we? No. Let's try that again, because now it's 6 o'clock, which means it's really time for Off the Wall. And a good evening to everybody. Emmanuel Goldstein back with you after 6 weeks on the road. That road being overseas throughout various countries in Europe. And boy, it feels good to be back, but it also feels kind of weird to be back. You know, the old jet lag is kicking in, and things just seem a little kind of surreal at moments. Press the wrong buttons and walk into walls and things like that. It's kind of a good feeling, you know. It's kind of a diversion from the norm. And I know it's going to wear off in a couple of days. What's funny is, you know, I never have trouble going over there. You know, whenever I travel overseas, whenever I wind up, you know, flying from here to Germany or Holland or England or something like that, you know, I get off the plane and I'm plenty tired, but I'm able to stay up a few more hours and then I fall asleep at a good time and wake up and everything's cool. But when I come back here, I don't know, everything's kind of weird, you know, and takes days, sometimes weeks, for it to snap back. And of course, you know, I see all the things around me that I recognize, and it comes back slowly. And things look kind of strange. Things look different. Things take on a whole new meaning when you've been doing things a different way for the past however many days or weeks. Little things like driving, flushing toilets, turning on light switches, closing doors, saying hello to people, saying goodbye to people, watching television, listening to the radio, that kind of thing. It's all different. Everything is different. And that's why I recommend it so much. All these people are so in awe and in envy, thinking that it's something that's really difficult and hard and impossible to pull off. But you know what? It's not. It's so easy. I actually went to places like Russia and Belarus. How many of you have even said Belarus? You know, it's one of these countries that hasn't been around all that long. I'm not going to tell you where it is either. You should know where it is. Everyone should know where it is. Everyone in Europe knows where it is. Not everyone in Europe has gone there. But I think they should. Just like I think we should all wander around as much as possible. And I know it's hard. You have to figure out ways to get out of school, get out of work, get out of a marriage, I don't know, whatever it is you have to get out of to get out of the house. But it's all decision. It's all something that you can shape if you really want to. And for me, whenever I go away, it's kind of like therapy. You know, it saves a lot of money over, you know, paying some guy that doesn't really care and is simply collecting the money every 50 minutes or so. This, to me, is sort of like a cleansing of the spirit, where you wander around foreign streets, you don't understand anything that's going on around you, as far as language, that is. And somehow, and it's hard to explain why, but somehow, that's very reassuring. It just makes you feel like all of us as a race, as a planet, we're all going to make it somehow and get through whatever problems we manufacture for ourselves. And for the past 6 weeks, I've been in countries where the native language is not English, so it's kind of weird to be back in a place where everyone's native language supposedly is English, or most people anyway. And realize that a lot of the people out there in foreign cities speak better English than people here whose native tongue is English, but I won't get into that. That's a whole show in itself. Where did I go? Well, that's a good question. Well, you know, I started in the predictable places of the Netherlands and Holland. I like to fly into Holland because it's very much like home to me now, because I've been there so many times. I'm very familiar with the place. And everybody speaks English very well. Everything is designed for ease, simplicity. It's all very intuitive. And it's also convenient. Because the main excuse I used for going over this time was the Chaos Communications Camp, which, in case you haven't heard me talk about it for many weeks on both this show and the other show, was a hacker gathering. It took place in a camp field in Germany. And the amazing thing about that was that the camp field in Germany was probably about 20 kilometers away, I think 24 kilometers total, from Berlin. Now, you've heard of Berlin, I'm sure. It's a big city. It used to be two big cities. Now it's one really big city. But 24 kilometers away, which I guess is about, 15 miles or something? Is that right? I don't know. I'm in the metric system in my head, and I have trouble converting. I can get into one system or another. It's the conversions that I have difficulty with. But regardless, 24 kilometers away from Berlin, you're in the middle of nowhere. You're in the middle of farm fields, cows, ducks, you know, horses, farmers, everywhere. You can see the stars at night. You can hear all kinds of wildlife. And you can have 2,000 people show up in the middle of a field and live there for a week. And that's exactly what we did. Bunch of computer hackers. You wouldn't think computer hackers would be prone to going into the forest or fields or farmlands and living for a week. After all, what happens to all the technology? That stuff that drives us, the stuff that makes us live from one day to another. How could we survive without that? Well, short answer, we didn't. We brought it with us, and we were able to hook it all up because, well, let's just say the people over there are very clever as far as how they can set up cities in a very short amount of time. We were able to have power. We were able to have internet connectivity, wireless 802.11 connectivity, and Ethernet. All kinds of things. You would not know you were in the middle of the wilderness or the farmlands, whatever you want to call it. You just would not know that because everything was there. Everything that you know, you needed to stay in touch with people, such as a phone system, a radio station, full internet connectivity, better than what I have at my house, or probably here on campus. In other words, everything was just as good or better than if I was sitting right here at home. And yet we were in the middle of a camp field with 2,000 other people for practically a week. And that in itself was a very purifying, cleansing experience because you don't want it to end. You know, you go in with trepidation, you're not sure how it's going to turn out, you know, I haven't camped out in a while, what's that going to be like? But everything just kind of worked out. Interesting talks, interesting seminars, lots of interesting people. Met so many cool people there, including a lot of cool people from the United States. It's amazing. You have to go to Germany to meet the cool people from the United States, but whatever works. So that's how I spent close to 1 week of the 6 weeks I was away. I also went to Paris. Spent a lot of time walking around in Paris because that's the kind of city you can do that in. Everything is set. It's like Washington, D.C. times 10, if you can imagine that, with monuments and statues, museums, wide streets. It's amazing in the daytime. It's amazing at night. And what I like to do is I like to go into a foreign city and just simply walk around. Not a taxi person at all. Don't like taxis. They always rip me off anyway. I like the subways, the metros, you know, those are cool. But mostly I like to walk and just explore and see those things that you wouldn't see unless you were on foot. Hear those snippets of conversation go by, whether they're in a foreign tongue or not. And that's how I see Paris. It's just a very comfortable place to be and just watch people. And of course, the food is amazing. No matter where you go, you just pick a dive in the middle of the street at random, and it'll be better than anything you've had in 5 years if you haven't left this place. And you won't even know what you're eating, and that's probably best that way. But yeah, walking around Paris, I must have spent, the first day or two I was there, I must have spent something like 8 hours just walking from one end of the Champs-Élysées to another, to the city, the skyscrapers, walking upstairs, never possible. That's one good thing when you're on holiday like this, is just to simply get as much exercise as you can, because, you know, you're riding around in trains from one city to the next, you're not getting much exercise then. And plus it just makes you feel less guilty for not being home. Not that you should feel guilty for not being home, because, you know, with technology today, you can do everything, I mean it, everything that you do at home if you're away. If not more. In fact, I think I've done more work traveling than I would do if I stayed here, because there's less distractions. You're sitting on a train for a number of hours. You have a laptop. You can do whatever work you wind up doing. And as far as expenses, wow, you know, when I went east of Germany, which is where I spent a good deal of this trip, I had never been to that section before, but when I went into the east, I realized just how incredibly cheap things are. You can have a full meal, you know, like you could have something that would really fill you up. I'm talking salad, I'm talking main course, bread, soup, dessert, a few drinks even. The whole thing would cost you less than $10. And you're not even expected to leave a tip, but, you know, I always do anyway. Sometimes it shocks them. And that's what I like to do. So it's something to experience if you ever go east of Germany. Just wander around various places there. The first place I went to, obviously, was Poland, because that's the next country over. I'd never been there, never knew what to expect, and you're always kind of scared, you know? You're always kind of scared going into a new place, a new environment, whether it's junior high school or college or a new job or a different country, you know? And I think that's a good thing to experience, that fear, you know, that anxiety where you don't know what's going to happen next, and you have to sort of rely on your wits. And that's why I always go into a city. I have a place to stay. I usually book something really cheap on the internet, which is, you know, quite possible to do. Hotel rooms in these places can cost something like $30, and they're nice rooms. But you arrive on the train station or bus station in some cases, and you have to figure out how to get to the place. First of all, you have to figure out how to change money, because these places don't use the euro, for the most part. Maybe they will someday, but right now they're not. So you have to, when you get off the train, you have to figure out where to get money so you can do things. Because your credit cards ain't going to work over there. I made the mistake of getting traveler's checks. You know, those were no good at all. Not that I needed them. Wound up not using them at all. So you can't use credit cards. You can't use traveler's checks. You certainly can't use personal checks. I'd like to try that. When's the last time you saw someone pay with a personal check? You know, for something major someplace. Remember when I was a kid, everyone would pay by check. You know, that was the thing. But no, you have to use cash. You have to use cash, and you have to get cash in order to use cash, so you have to go to one of these change places, which I guess in America we're not that familiar with it. But over there, every single train station and lots of times on the street, and certainly in the airport, you have little change bureaus, places where you go and you hand them a particular form of currency, and they hand you back another form of currency. Sometimes they ask to see your passport, depending on how bureaucratic they are. And so that's the first thing you'd have to do if you wanted to do anything. And sometimes I would get in and it would be too late. You know, it would be like 11:15 at night and the change place was closed. What do you do? What do you do? You know, you can't use, well, sometimes you can use American dollars, sometimes, but not always. So I'd always have to figure out. I had a few guidebooks with me. Some of them are pretty good. Some of them are kind of weird. I don't have them with me. Maybe I'll bring them in a week or two, and we can laugh at them together, some of the things they tell you about these places. But those guidebooks at least enabled me to know approximately where it was I was going. Not always, because they weren't very good maps, but for the most part, you'd know, you'd get a sense of the direction, and if you were lucky, train stations, bus stations are in the middle of town where most things are anyway, and you just sort of had to wander around and find the place you were staying at. And once you were there, you kind of can establish a beachhead and, you know, control things from there. Figure out, you can first of all drop off your bag so you don't have to walk around like an idiot looking like someone from out of town who doesn't know where he's going. And that's the other thing. When you travel around, there's no need to take all these, you know, massive trunks and huge suitcases. I mean, what do you need? What do you need to bring with you? You don't need to bring bricks, you know? There's no reason to have this heavy thing that no one else can pick up. It just weighs you down. The only thing you need to bring are a few days' worth of clothing changes, and if you're like me, some little bits of technology to keep you entertained, such as a laptop, an iPod, a digital camera. Man, did that ever make a difference? The old days of taking pictures with film, they're gone. They're completely gone. Instead, you have this camera where you can take literally thousands of pictures now. Well, thousands if you download the pictures to your laptop and free up some space, but at pretty decent quality, you can get several hundred in one shot, including some 30-second videos, which I thought were pretty cool. And in the weeks ahead, somehow we're going to figure out how to do this. We're going to show these pictures on the radio, some of them, not all of them. Don't want to bore people too much, but there are some very interesting things that I saw that I was able to capture, and hopefully I can organize those. So yeah, you know, little bits of technology like that, and of course a phone. Oh yeah, the phone is so vital, because that really kind of keeps you sane. At least it does for me. When you have a GSM phone, you're able to communicate back home by sending email, or, God forbid, making a phone call. I think those are expensive. I don't know how much they cost. I'm going to find out really soon, and I'm going to be probably in a much worse mood next week when I see the bill. But basically, GSM is a technology that hasn't really caught on in this country. You know, it's one of the many things that the whole world does that we don't do for no particular good reason. But GSM is a world standard. It's probably the reason we resist it, you know, like the metric system and all that. World standard of wireless telecommunications. And you can do various cool things. You can do things like send what's known as SMS messages, which I guess is stands for, short message service or something like that. So you really shouldn't say short message service message, I guess. But SMS, you know, it's the SMS technology. It enables you to send little two-line messages to other phones. Or, in the case of my phone, if you prefix that with an email address and send it to the proper gateway number, you can send little two-line emails to people. And I got to tell you, that's what kept me from feeling completely isolated. Maybe it would have been better if I did completely isolate myself. Maybe that's even more therapeutic. I don't know. But in order to do certain things, in order to take care of things back home, for instance, or contact certain people, since I was working at the same time, it's necessary to be able to communicate with people. And you certainly don't want to do that by using, say, hotel phones. It's probably the worst thing you could possibly do. There might be other cheaper ways of doing things through, say, prepaid calling cards and technology like that, which is also fairly new. But I didn't really have much experience coming the other way on those. You know, you have to buy a prepaid phone card in another country, and who knows? Who knows how much it costs actually and where you can use it, that kind of thing. Maybe next time I'll experiment with that a little bit more. But having a phone really does make a difference. And the thing is, so many people, when they travel overseas, the other Americans that I ran into, almost all of them did not have this. And it was a real pain in the ass for them to communicate. You know, occasionally you get connectivity online. You could send email that way. But nothing's cooler than being on a train in the middle of Russia and your phone rings and it's someone from home, you know, just wanting to say hi. Yeah, it brightens your day. Of course, a month later when you see the bill, it probably doesn't brighten your day as much. And hopefully that will go down real soon. Look at phone call costs now. If you're sitting in a house somewhere in the United States, odds are you've got some kind of calling plan where you're able to call a different country for under 10 cents a minute. Imagine that, under 10 cents a minute to call over the ocean. I used a service, which I'll talk about on Off the Hook a little more tomorrow, that enabled us to contact each other, people in the States being able to contact me, that is, by calling a toll-free number, 800 number, 877 number, whatever. And through the web, you could program this. You could program this particular system to ring a number overseas. Now, if you have call forwarding through Verizon or some other such company, you try forwarding overseas, it's not going to work. I don't know why, but they don't let you do that. And when I realized this back in July, I said, oh, my God, you know, how am I going to have people call me without calling my cell phone all the time and racking up the numbers? So we found this system online that actually allows you to forward overseas. And the rates are simply unbelievable. Like, at one point, to Moscow, 4 cents a minute. And that includes the toll-free number. You know, someone's got to pay for the call to the 800 number. And in the past, that cost something like 25 cents a minute alone, let alone what a call to Moscow would cost. So I don't care if they're using a tin can with string. You know, it works. It works. And that's what we use to communicate for a number of hours. I was pretty happy with that. So, yeah, technology has made things a lot more possible. I don't know if they've made things more interesting because the really interesting things have nothing to do with technology. You know, the interacting with people, the walking through the foreign streets, the seeing the sights, and just feeling the culture, trying out the different kinds of food, and just hearing the languages, you know? It's really something to just be in a place where you don't hear English for a long, long time. Now, throughout the whole time I was in Poland, which was a few days, virtually nobody spoke English in Warsaw that I found, anyway. There were people, obviously, but most of the people amongst me did not speak any English. And this got to be a real pain in the ass when I had to buy a ticket to get to Kaliningrad. Now, Kaliningrad is an interesting place. I call it Russia's Hawaii, okay, because picture the United States. You know about Hawaii, or maybe Alaska is more appropriate. I don't know. It's a detached section of the country. Now, Russia has a detached section of its country. I bet a lot of people don't know this, but if you look at a map, you will see next to the Baltic republics, you know them, right? Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. Right to the left of Lithuania, you'll see this little strip of Russia. I like to tell people, I like to go to people and say, look, that's Russia. What's all the fuss about? That's Russia. It's a little tiny country, see? And some people actually fall for that. Yeah, it's fun to play with geography in people's brains. But Kaliningrad actually used to be part of East Prussia. And I believe as one form of punishment or another for the Germans being bad, it got to Russia as Kaliningrad. A lot of German tourists go there still. But it's gotten kind of isolated from the rest of Russia. And now that the Baltics are going to be joining the European Union, it's really kind of isolated. Because they'll need permission from the EU to get to the other part of Russia. Imagine that. To get from one part of the country to another, you need permission from the European Union that you're not a part of. So Kaliningrad is kind of a puzzling place, and I think they have less idea of what's going to happen to them next than anybody. You also get the sense that it's really kind of archaic. I mean, Kalinin, that the city is named after, or that actually the region is named after, Kaliningrad, was named after the prime henchman, as he's described, of Stalin. Joseph Stalin, you know, the real bastard of the 20th century. Or maybe the second bastard. I don't know. It depends who you talk to. Very interesting perspectives that you hear. But millions of people died under Stalin, and his pal, this place is named after, Kaliningrad. And there's a big statue of Kalinin as you get off the train. Another statue of Lenin in the other part of town, which I thought was pretty interesting. You think all the statues were torn down? No, they weren't. They weren't. There's hammers and sickles everywhere, too. So it's almost like the Soviet Union is still there to a degree. I mean, the mood is not repressive. It's rather rather friendly, just rather alien. When I got off the train, I'm sorry, when I got off the bus, because train connection to Poland wasn't the best. You had to travel at like midnight or something, and I just didn't feel like riding on a night train. So I wound up taking a bus. I guess I should mention what a Polish bus is like. Or just Polish driving in general. Or maybe it's just Eastern European driving. Or maybe it's just the world in general and not us. I don't know. But when you're on a bus, okay, you know how, I mean, I don't know how many people have traveled on a bus, but if you travel on a bus, occasionally the bus passes a vehicle. You've seen that happen, right? I mean, it's just like if you're in a car, except a whole lot of other people's lives are at risk all of a sudden when this happens. You're on a little two-lane road. Guy in front of you is going slow, so the bus waits for a gap in oncoming traffic and simply passes. No big deal. They do things a little differently over there, though. They're a lot more relaxed as far as the oncoming traffic. Now, in the United States, you would see a car coming, and oh my God, you know, way in the distance, I got to get back into my lane right away. Sometimes you'd abort the passing altogether, or sometimes you just speed up really fast, or honk, or panic, or whatever it is that you know that you would do. I know that's what I would do. But over there, they're just very relaxed. The car is coming at you. You're still in its lane, coming at it. The guy next to you isn't slowing down at all. And then, almost by magic, you inch in front of the guy next to you, while the car is continuing to approach you at full speed, and then you sort of ease back into your lane, and the oncoming car just passes right by you. Almost as if you were passing in the same direction. That's how close it is. And nobody thinks anything of this, except me, of course. Scared out of my wits, vowing never to ride on a bus again. And that's why I don't like buses. You know, trains don't do that. They do other things, but they don't do that. So anyway, I took the bus to Kaliningrad from Poland. That was an adventure in itself, getting the bus ticket, because I had to find out how to get to Kaliningrad. I knew I could do it by train. I didn't want to take a midnight train, so I figured, okay, there's a noon bus. I'll take the noon bus. So the place I was staying at, I asked them, well, okay, how can I get a ticket for this noon bus, and where exactly does it leave from? So they told me to go to the travel agent, which was down the block. So I went to the travel agent down the block, and they said, oh, our computers are broken. Go to our bigger office, which is in the middle of town, and take this bus to get there, which was no problem at all, a little city bus. Went to the other place, and they had no idea what I was talking about. I said, no, we don't sell tickets to Kaliningrad. You need to go to the bus station. Here's how to get to the bus station. I'll take another bus to get to the bus station. And I went to the bus station where massive amounts of people, chaos, yelling, screaming going on. Finally, I wait on this long line, and I get to this person who, of course, speaks no English whatsoever. And I just try to communicate to this person in Kaliningrad. I want to go to Kaliningrad. And she just shakes her head and says, no. I'm not going to let you go to Kaliningrad. No, you can't do that. I didn't know what the problem was. And eventually, I guess she wrote it down in some way and then just dismissed me and went on to the next person. So I had these little clues on a piece of paper that I had to try and figure out. Fortunately, there was a tourist office next to the information bus people that didn't speak any English. I went over there and I asked them to translate it for me, and they said, you have to go to the other bus station in town, and you have to take another bus to get there. And so that's what I did, and that actually was surprisingly easy. I just said Kaliningrad, and the person yelled something at me, and I assumed that was a demand for money. I gave them money, and they yelled again. I gave them more money. And it actually didn't cost that much. It only cost, it was under $10. And the ticket was just a simple credit card receipt, it looked like. And so I showed up the next day and took the bus to Kaliningrad. And then when I arrived in Kaliningrad, in Russia, after going through all the passport controls and all that kind of thing, I didn't know where I was. I wasn't even sure I was in Kaliningrad. Now, keep in mind, they use a different alphabet there. They use the Cyrillic alphabet, not the Roman alphabet, the Cyrillic alphabet. Different letters. Different sounds for different letters. Now, before I left, everyone advised me to do this, and I advised myself to do this. Take a few days and learn the Cyrillic alphabet. Learn how things are pronounced. Learn what words look like. Seemed like a really good idea, a really practical idea. You know, something that anybody traveling abroad should do is study the alphabet, at least, if you don't know the language. And I started to do this. And then all of a sudden it hit me. No. Any idiot can learn the alphabet. That's too easy. Learning the alphabet. What's a challenge, what's interesting, is to go into a country not knowing anything and surviving. Not knowing the language, not knowing the alphabet, not knowing how to pronounce things, not knowing what words look like. That's the real challenge. That's like going to another planet. You have to figure out how to get to various places with virtually no knowledge whatsoever except common sense. And so that's what I did. I stopped learning, and I just went in there completely ignorant. And boy, when I got off the bus wasn't in the main part of town. The bus station that is wasn't in the main part of town. I wasn't even sure I was in Kaliningrad because I couldn't read Kaliningrad. All I know is everybody got off the bus. So I figured that was the thing I was supposed to do, too, was get off the bus, and I did. And there were no signs of anything that looked like a hotel, just a bunch of concrete buildings with hammers and sickles on them and people walking around very purposefully. And it started to rain then. It started to rain. There were no change places open. I had no money, no idea where I was going. It was raining. I didn't know what the words looked like. I didn't know what the words sounded like. Oh, and here's the other thing. Yes, I forgot about this. I had made a reservation in a hotel in Kaliningrad, or at least I had tried to. The thing you have to remember about Russia is they're very bureaucratic about certain things, and they insisted, even though I did this via email, that in order for me to reserve this hotel, I had to fax them. I had to fax them a letter. Now, I was at the camp at the time I was doing this. I was at the hacker camp, and the one thing we didn't have was a fax machine or a way of sending faxes to these people. I suppose I could have done it online if I had devoted some time to it, but I figured, you know, the whole thing was pretty silly as it is. I'd just do it when I get into the city, which I did. Didn't hear anything back from them. I called them the day I was going to Kaliningrad to find out and make sure they got the fax, and they said, oh, yeah, we got the fax, but it was too late. We had already sold all the hotel rooms. There were no rooms available. So I was going into this place not knowing where I was going to stay even. So I just started walking. Started walking down this road in the rain. You can only get so wet, you know, so it didn't really matter. I only had two little bags, so it wasn't really heavy or cumbersome to walk for a while. And I was used to walking. It was actually, you know, kind of a time where you could think of various things, you know, be alone with your thoughts. As all these people drove by or walked by or stared at you. And eventually, after about maybe 40 minutes of walking, I came to another part of town. The part of town that has the Lenin statue. And I went into the first building that wasn't closed. And everything I needed was there. A place to change money. And a hotel. I asked them if they had rooms. They said yes. And guess what? It was the same hotel that the other place had told me had no rooms. And I got it for even cheaper. So, yeah, that's an adventure walking around Russia for the first time, or Kaliningrad. Some people don't consider it to be part of Russia, but I certainly do. It's a fun thing to do, just wandering around foreign places. I have enough material to talk about this for weeks, but I don't want to spend every waking moment talking about this, especially since I just got back yesterday and I'm kind of still stunned at all this moving around. So I'd like to hear from people, see what's been going on here over the past few weeks. I know I missed the blackout. I was in Warsaw during the blackout. I am really upset by that. You only get a good blackout maybe once every 30 years. And I'll tell you this, though. When I was over there, our phone number, by the way, 631-632-WUSB. When I was over there, I just heard on the internet, actually, that there was a massive blackout affecting all of New York and most of the Northeast. I tried calling people. I tried calling everybody I knew. And one of two things would happen. I'd either get a recording saying that there was no circuits in various languages. I'd just get this recording saying no circuits available. Or the phone would just ring and not answer. Which would make sense if someone's answering machine wasn't plugged in or, you know, didn't have any power. I gotta tell you, it was a scary thing being there. It was about midnight at the time for me. Not being able to reach anybody you knew back home. Almost as if the country was just gone. It was pretty freaky. I finally had to call someone in Europe and get more information from them. But it took a day. It took a day to reach people. You couldn't get through to any cell phones. Couldn't get through to any landlines. I guess I could have called someone in California, but it's possible that wouldn't have worked either, you know, because the circuits to the States were busy. All right, let's take a call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Is this us? Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I was just listening to you talk about the blackout.
Yeah, that was me.
Was there great coverage of the blackout in Warsaw?
The only coverage was on TV, obviously. I would watch Polish TV, and you'd see the video of all the people walking across the bridges, and you'd know what they were talking about. Or you could watch CNN International and see it there. But the interesting thing was, this blackout affected, it affected Detroit, it affected Toronto, it affected Cleveland, I think, all kinds of cities. You didn't see any coverage of any of that. You just saw New York.
Well, that's not surprising, right?
But it's like those places didn't exist. You know, it's they had massive blackouts. A lot of people were inconvenienced. But no, New York, that's the place everyone focused on. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Tell me about the food in Warsaw, will you?
Borscht. You like borscht?
I like it cold and hot.
Well, I had it cold over there, and it was really, really good. In fact, the borscht I had in Poland was better than the ones I had in Russia, and I had quite a lot.
You bring back any cleaning ladies for us?
Any what?
Any Polish cleaning ladies?
No, I couldn't get visas for them.
My wife and I are having a hard time finding a few.
What, you need a Polish cleaning lady?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you can get cleaning ladies of all different nationalities, Lithuanian cleaning ladies, I believe, and, you know, all kinds of different. But, no, I didn't actually see any over there.
Are you going to play any music today? Do you have any Polish rock and roll for us?
I have something that I would like to play, actually. When I went to Latvia, I haven't even gotten into the Baltics, and maybe I'll get into that in a future week because time is just running out so fast. There's so many things that I want to communicate and talk about, and some of them are very interesting things. But in Latvia, there is this incredible church. In fact, there's this whole old town theme that goes throughout the Baltics. If you go to Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, all those cities have the old section of town with these really ancient churches and things. This church is called the Riga Dom. It's huge. It's got the biggest pipe organ, I think, in Europe, if not the world. And I saw a sign, and I was able to figure out the sign, translated, that said that there was a pipe organ concert that night. And I actually went and got tickets and went and sat on this concert. And I bought a CD, and I have some pipe organ music here from that very organ.
Wow, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
Why are you on the air discussing this stuff?
Why am I on the air discussing that? That's a good question. Well, I don't know, because I'm on the air, and that's what's on my mind.
I just tuned in sort of inadvertently, actually.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering what it is that... is there an agenda behind your show? I mean, be it good or bad, or...
An agenda. Well, an agenda. It's basically just to communicate ideas, I guess, and talk about different subjects and things like that. In my case, I was away for 6 weeks, so I'm kind of explaining what I was doing for the last 6 weeks and hopefully getting feedback.
What is your show like normally? I mean, before
normally,
you were away.
Well, you can listen to all the old episodes on the web. And see for yourself what it was like. But we basically talk about the news. We talk about things. I was going to read the news today, what's going on in the world, but our printer's broken, so I wasn't able to do that.
What do you think about what's happening in Israel today?
Oh, boy.
The problem the problem of Palestine.
It's fascinating. It really is. This is going to be a whole show in itself. I spent a good part of my trip going to the relics of World War II, because I'm fascinated by this. I was in Warsaw. I spent maybe an entire day looking for the remnants of the Warsaw Ghetto. There is one wall that has remained up in the ghetto. Now, I spent the entire day wandering around, following directions to see where this thing was. I even found the synagogue, the one remaining synagogue in Warsaw, which is, you know, unbelievable. I found people there. They told me where it was. They told me the wrong place to go. And I finally went to the right place, and I found this wall. And it was incredibly moving to see this brick wall that represented the boundary of the ghetto. And it was in the middle of an apartment building. You know, there were houses all around it. But right there was just this wall and some candles that people had left.
Were there any teeth or fingernails or things like this, you know, embedded in it?
No, people weren't. It wasn't a prison in that sense, where people. It was just kind of like a section of town that all the Jews were herded into, and basically, I guess, told not to leave. But no, it wasn't. It wasn't gruesome like that until people were taken out of the ghetto and sent to other horrible places.
Were you chiefly interested in I guess pieces of World War II history that are related to the Jews in Europe at that time?
Well, that's one of the major things I was interested in. I'm also interested, obviously, in how it affected entire countries. For instance, in Latvia, there's this amazing museum of occupation where they talk about not only the Nazis, but the Soviets, and how the Soviets were just as bad as the Nazis to them. I'm not sure if I agree with that, but a lot of people did die under the Soviets. Stalin caused all kinds of mayhem and horror. And the Latvians, as well as the Estonians, many of them were forced to fight on the wrong side. Or I don't know if force is the right word. Many of them chose to fight on the wrong side. I don't know. A lot of brothers would fight brothers. Some would fight for the Red Army. Some would fight for the Nazis.
Well, it's certainly what took place is a form of ethnic cleansing that rarely is discussed in any circles whatsoever.
I know, and I think it needs to be. I think people need to confront this head on. Just the fact that these monuments, these relics of the past, are so forgotten that people don't know where they are, that's something that shocked me. You know, that's something that I think needs to be addressed. And when you understand that, when you've been to these places and you see them and you sort of feel, you know, what went on there, you know, you try to imagine in your mind what went on there. You try to put that into perspective today, and you don't fully understand anything, obviously, but you might have some insight that you didn't have before that relates to a current world situation.
Well, it certainly is happening.
Yeah. And, you know, what's happening today is a direct offshoot of what happened in the past, you know, during that period. It's not over, you know. It just keeps manifesting itself in new and horrible ways.
you think that the intensely huge use of heroin in Russia now is related to their having joined the world economy?
Well, you know, I didn't really see a whole lot of evidence of the use of heroin there. I've heard that heroin is becoming popular, but, you know, I think that's part of just becoming... Wow, that's a loud ring. Hold on a second, I gotta figure out why the phone is ringing like that. Okay, somebody didn't hit a button that needs to be hit. Oh, and I lost the caller, too. Boy, this phone is, this is annoying. Okay, wait, how about press this button? Yeah, now I'm gonna call it myself. Okay, I think that fixed it. I'm sorry, caller, but we lost you there. Yeah, but you touched upon some very interesting interesting points. And, yeah, it certainly relates in various ways to what's going on today around the world. And you can't forget one piece of history and only focus on another piece of history. You have to put it all into some sort of perspective. I was pretty dismayed just wandering around these places and seeing how few people seem to care. For instance, again in Latvia, actually I was going to play the music, wasn't I? Let me play the music. I'll tell you about the what else I did in Riga, in Latvia, and maybe we'll take some more phone calls. 631-632-WUSB. This is the same pipe organ that that I got to listen to live. And I'll play a piece of this, and then I'll do the horrible thing of talking over it because we're running out of time. Okay, I seem to have picked the one track that doesn't really jump out at you. Let me go to something that I know will. Okay, it's starting to get a little more intense. There's something about pipe organs that always have communicated something to me. And so, you know, I figured when I saw a sign for this pipe organ concert, how many times am I going to get to see a real pipe organ like this? Or here, anyway. And that was the thing. You know, when you went to this concert, I don't know if you've ever been to a concert in a church, but sometimes the way they set up the seats in these places is kind of weird, kind of strange. First of all, there were assigned seats. That's the thing in Europe. Everything is assigned seats. If you buy tickets on a train, buy tickets on a bus, it's all assigned. I didn't realize this when I went to the church, but yeah, I had to sit in a particular pew, particular seat in the particular pew, next to Americans, coincidentally enough. And we were facing the front. But then right in front of us, there were people facing left, and then people across from them facing right. And then the music started. And the music was coming from behind us. And I was looking at the people around me, saying to myself, where am I supposed to be looking? And I looked at the people, and everyone was sort of looking straight ahead. Not at anything in particular, just kind of lost in their thoughts. But I had to know, you know, I had to know, where is the guy playing the damn organ? Aren't we supposed to be looking at him? And since the music was coming from behind me, I figured that's probably where the guy was. But, you know, I didn't want to turn around because turning around when everyone's facing forward makes you look like kind of an idiot. Like I'm the only person there that doesn't know how it works. But I wasn't that afraid of looking like an idiot, so I did turn around. And I could see the organ. I could see all the people looking forward and staring at me. But there was no guy. So apparently the way these concerts work, the organ is so big and huge that the guy just sort of is hidden somewhere within it. And people just face all different directions and enjoy the music. But I don't know, to me, I just, when I go to a concert, I like to see the person, even the person is just spinning a record. You know, you sort of want to see the person behind the music. And in this case, he literally was behind the music. And we saw him at the end, at the very end of the concert. You know the concert is over. First of all, you don't applaud. Oh, no, no, no. If you ever go to a pipe organ concert, you do not applaud between sections. I didn't do it, so no, nobody did, in fact. Everybody knew that rule. Well, I didn't know the rule, actually. I was just waiting to see if anybody else would applaud. No one else did, so I kept quiet myself. But at the very end, the single light switch is turned on, and like one light goes on, and that's the end. That tells you the concert's over, and that's when everybody goes crazy and starts applauding and cheering and all that kind of thing. So at that point, the guy comes out from behind the organ and just sort of like waves, and everyone cheers. He was out for less than 5 seconds, and that was the end of that. The next day, though, I had a really interesting time. I went to monument in the middle of a forest where many Jews during World War II were slaughtered. And I heard this monument was really interesting. And in order to get there, I had to take a train. I'll tell you one thing Latvia is not known for is trains. I mean, they have trains. They have a bunch of them, but the service just is not that great. It really isn't. It's rather decrepit. The train I was in was this old clunker from the Soviet era, wooden benches inside. And you know how in Europe when a train moves, when a train starts moving, you don't even know it starts moving. It's so smooth, you know. You look out the window, oh, look, we're moving, you know. These trains aren't like that. You know you start moving when people who are standing up get knocked to the ground. That's how you know. That's also how you know when you stopped. And so I had to take one of these trains out to this station. And that's when another problem began to show itself, in that the stations weren't labeled except for the very front of them. So what that means is that the engineer knows where he is, and the people in the first car know where they are. But the people in all the other cars, well, if they don't know where they are to start with, they're not going to know until they leave. And that was the problem. And you couldn't move from one car to another. It wasn't very easy to do that. Every car has this middle-aged female conductor. And you do not want to mess with her. She has ultimate authority over everything that goes on in that car. And people respect that. So, yeah, of course, I missed my stop, and I had to get off at the next stop and come back on a different train and get off there and follow the signs, which did not exist, to this memorial. Fortunately, I had directions on how to get there. Have to literally walk through forest, find a paved path, make a right turn, and walk for half a mile, and there it is. And when I got there, I expected to see some sort of, you know, tourists or other people. Didn't see a single person. Not one person. The whole trip, since I got off the train and walked through the woods, it was all silent and quiet and spooky. And then I get to this monument, Soviet-style monument. Just had statues. And when I get the pictures, hopefully I can show them on the radio. I intend to do this. You'll see just how imposing those statues were. But, you know, they didn't really capture for me the true horror of what happened there. It seemed more like a solidarity type of statement from, you know, the Socialist Union and all that kind of thing. But that shocked me a lot less than just the fact that nobody was out there. This place was in the middle of the forest, and there was nobody there to see it. But in a sense, that made it more meaningful for me, because I felt the solitude, I felt the incredible pain that must have been prevalent in that area. But I was pretty dismayed by the fact that nobody really seemed to care. But when I got back to the train, actually, and I had to wait for another hour for the train to show up, it's another weird thing of these country stations in the middle of nowhere. People come and they sit for about 20 minutes waiting for the train, you know, old people. Then they leave. They just come and wait for a little while, and the train doesn't come, and they give up and they walk away. It's like fishing or something. Really weird. There's a whole thing going on over there that I don't understand. All I knew was, in order for me to catch my bus to Estonia, I had to get a train back to town pretty soon. So I was getting very frustrated. Hour and a half I had to wait, actually, for a train back. Finally showed up. And it was crowded, too. I don't know why there aren't more trains, but it was a very weird part of the country. I'm glad I saw it. I'm glad I saw it, and I'm glad I experienced that. And I will show the pictures when I have a chance. I'm almost out of time. And there's so many things I didn't get to. I didn't get to the news today. I didn't get to any of the other things that I want to talk about. But we'll have all kinds of opportunities to do that in the weeks ahead as the second season of Off the Wall is underway now. You can send us mail at otw@2600.com. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear your feedback on various things that we talk about or don't talk about. And, of course, we like to hear your phone calls when we have time to take them. Sorry we didn't get to more today, but we will in the future. We'll be on again tomorrow night on Off the Hook on WBAI. That starts at 7. And again next week, Tuesday night at 6, for another edition of Off the Wall. My name is Manuel Goldstein. I've been with you for the last hour, reminiscing about some of the things I've been up to. And we'll continue that next week along with other things. Stay tuned for the blues. This is WUSB Stony Brook. Have a good night.
You think they're so funny? Wait until they got you up.